Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
So I spend lots of time in the kitchen, and one question I get a lot is, what do I take for a quick snack? It's really tough to have something that you can grab out and go out the door with and know that you can trust what's in it without grabbing something that's uber processed, that has a bunch of ingredients that you don't know what they are in it. That's why Jen and I use Paleo Valley. And if you are somebody who likes beef sticks, turkey sticks, or protein bars, you definitely got to go to the link in the bio, click, get some beef sticks, get some of their bone broth protein bars. They're delicious. And if you use code OPTIMAL, you'll get 15% off your whole order. It's something you can trust. There's ingredients in there that you'll know what they are when you look at and read the label. The beef is 100% grass-fed and finished. The turkey or other meats that they used are pasture-raised. All of the best things, and they're delicious. Go check them out. Use code OPTIMAL. Get 15% off. So this next guest is really, really interesting and a pretty different topic than we normally would cover, being eyesight. Does anyone out there wear contacts or glasses, or have you even had LASIK surgery maybe? So our next guest, Jake Steiner, is going to talk into myopia or nearsightedness, not being able to see far. He's going to dive into the science behind myopia, why we might develop this, and how we can actually insert exercises and different actionable items every day to improve this. Jake used to be a stock trader and investor, and about 20 years ago, he started this journey of finding out how he could reverse his own negative 5 diopter myopia, basically meaning he had a negative 5 prescription on his glasses, which in his words, was pretty bad. So he dove into the hard science, figuring out why this happened and how he could take steps daily so that today he has natural 20/20 eyesight. It's not some sort of conspiracy. He actually shares where you can find all this information yourself. He has it on his website and shows you that you can start today, even while you're listening to this podcast, finding out how to start to improve your eyesight. So get ready. Let's dive in. All right, Jake, we are so excited to dive in with you because, of course, this topic that we're going to get into with eyesight and how we might have a little bit more ability to improve that than we think. We're super grateful for the time that you're giving us and excited to dive in.
I'm super excited to be here, actually.
Yeah, we haven't touched on this topic at all. And coming from not great eyesight from both of us, we're actually extremely curious. So, first of all, what got you into diving into this? Because I don't believe you're an ophthalmologist or anything like that, right?
Correct. And I think that's probably how I ended up in this. If you follow the career path, the education sort of, in most cases, precludes the sort of things we talk about, interestingly. But that's kind of another topic. I used to be a stock trader and investor, and I got into this out of vanity, basically. I had really strong glasses, and the stronger your glasses are, the smaller your eyes look behind them. So I was a single guy with these tiny little eyes behind thick glasses, and I went to an optometrist at one point in my early 20s, and they said I needed stronger glasses again. So that kicked off a journey of research into how the biology actually works, and this was kind of before a lot of internet, so it was libraries and things. And over the years, I figured out that we know better, that myopia is not an illness, it's not a genetic condition, and that it's something that's totally reversible.
That's super interesting. And I kind of want to start right there with myopia. And what exactly is that? What does it mean? And where did you find a lot of this research? Because I know that if you go kind of mainstream, you don't find really anything in these peer-reviewed journals that say, oh yeah, you can correct your eyesight. So where were you looking for this kind of research?
So myopia, I'm a marketing genius. The website's called End Myopia. Nobody knows what myopia is. It's just short-sightedness. Short-sightedness, nearsightedness, you need glasses for clear distance vision. So there's two pieces as far as the science and biology goes. One is the cause, and the other is me saying you can reverse it. And scholar.google.com, one of my favorite websites, where you find most clinical research easily. And I reference it pretty often because I think it's really important for people to be able to search for some of these things. The piece that is very much undebated is that short-sightedness is not a genetic issue. And if you go to scholar.google.com and you type in pseudomyopia, P-S-E-U-D-O, myopia, you'll get tens of thousands of search results of all peer-reviewed clinical signs saying what actually causes myopia. And if you type in the other big keyword is lens-induced myopia, lens-induced caused by lenses, again, you get tens of thousands of results showing that what causes your eyesight to continue to get worse is the lens wear. So the so-called prescription that you're being sold to actually make your eyesight worse. That's pretty well established. And that's all in optometry and ophthalmology journals. The fact or the idea that it's reversible is debatable, right? Like there's a good amount of science that shows that what causes myopia, which is the elongation of the eyeball, is not permanent, that the eyeball adjusts in length continuously, which is what I claim causes your myopia to reverse. But there is no real strong, clear evidence that says consistently for anybody and everybody, you could get rid of your glasses.
So what does cause it then? I'm so curious because especially, you know, I'm thinking of young kids or my niece who needs glasses, you know? So how does that, if it's not necessarily genetic, how is it caused?
So yeah, so it's per optometry and ophthalmology peer-reviewed journals, it's absolutely not genetic in most cases, in the vast majority of cases. And pseudomyopia, so the beginning of short-sightedness, is a muscle spasm in the eye. And the super short version, the way it works is there is a lens in the front of the eye and the retina where the light is focused in the back of the eye. And that lens moves like a camera lens. And what moves that lens is a muscle. And the closer up you look at something, the tighter that muscle gets to shape that lens for close-up vision. And doing so now if you're in close-up mode, that muscle is really tense. The closer you get to something that you're looking at, that more tense that muscle gets. By design, it's not meant to do this for hours and hours and hours every single day in one go. So that muscle spasms. Pseudomyopia is a muscle spasm of the muscle that shapes the lens. And now you're not actually short-sighted. You just you're stuck in close-up mode. And that's pseudomyopia. That's the beginning. That's where your niece is because parents let them play with iPads and iPhones and watch too much content up close, plus all the homeworks. All of that close-up time causes that muscle spasm.
Yeah, and that's kind of concerning being in the age of screens and mass-produced screens when the easiest thing to do is just stick a screen in front of a kid.
Well, and that's how their schooling is done right now. I mean, that's what it is. So how do we start to combat that even? Because if that's what we're diving into, especially during quarantine and we're at computers and sitting at screens, like, how do we stop that?
The first thing, so the number one thing is that muscle gets tighter the closer you look at something. That's really super key. So if you give a child a phone to watch cartoons on, child has very short arms. The phone has a relatively small screen. So immersion requires for you to be pretty close to that screen is significantly worse than, say, a TV, right? That might be at 6 feet away. At 6 feet, that ciliary muscle is almost completely relaxed. At the phone distance, that ciliary muscle is extremely tight. So the number one thing that helps is distance, right? Mm-hmm. Like if we're watching or working at a computer screen distance even, you know, the thing is at 60 centimeters, you're already doing a lot better than phone screen. I have a 5-year-old myself, and the number one rule is no phones. Like he is never holding a phone and playing with it. Mm-hmm. Things are always at that ideally 6 feet distance, sometimes a little bit less. Managing the distance is really key.
So I kind of like this because I tend to think of things from within my own scope where with physical therapy, we tell people, hey, when you're working, if you need to be sitting at work, it's just good to not do it for 8 hours a day or 8 hours in a row. Is there a certain amount of time that somebody say they need to be on their phone that you would say, hey, try not to be looking at something you know, close up like that for a certain amount of time?
It varies by person, and there's ways to kind of gauge if you have that muscle spasm, but very generally speaking, 3 hours is a good maximum amount. If you do 3 hours and then get a nice, I try to get an hour break, and people shake their heads at me going, hey, I'm at work, I can't get an hour break. You do whatever is possible, but that will be the ideal situation. If you go much past 3 hours, that muscle spasm really tends to get stuck for easily for the rest of the day. So for me personally, I feel it pretty strongly after 3 hours, and I just get away from screens for a while if I can.
Yeah, absolutely. So you kind of talked about a little bit earlier, you know, glasses, and I'm sure, I guess I'm making an assumption, but contacts might be in this same boat of these things can actually long-term make that eyesight worse. Can you kind of explain why that happens?
So yeah, that's the big topic. And that's why I recommend people go to Google Scholar and type in lens-induced myopia, because nobody believes this. It just sounds like such a conspiracy theory, because selling you lenses is $100 billion a year business. It's a shocking scale, $100 billion a year. And lenses in your glasses cost the optometrists anywhere from $2 to $5. Not the frames themselves, it can be whatever, but just the lenses, a pair of lenses, $2 to $5 is the wholesale cost that they mark up, you know, thousands of percent. So this is an extremely profitable business. There's no malice. I'm not saying there's anything wrong there, but there's, of course, a very heavy bias to selling you lenses. So when I tell people this, they're like, okay, that sounds like a conspiracy, which is why I say go to scholar.google.com, type in lens-induced myopia. That's short-sightedness caused by lenses. And you'll find tens of thousands of peer-reviewed clinical science results that basically all say the same thing, which is you have a muscle spasm, right? Now, the muscle spasm causes the light not to focus on your retina correctly, because the lens is stuck in close-up mode. You put a pair of lenses in front of the eye. What they do is they move that light back to hit the retina correctly. So basically, circumventing the muscle spasm that continues, the light is now focused again on the retina. The problem with this 16th century invention is that it also causes something called hyperopic defocus, also worth looking up on Google Scholar, which basically means some of the light is not hitting on the retina, but behind it. And the eye is a built-in mechanism to check itself, because it's basically a fluid-filled sac, right? Like it's a membrane filled with fluid, more or less. And it's never perfectly round. So it has a built-in system that adjusts continuously that it's the correct length. And when the light from the lens hits, some of the light hits behind the retina, the built-in system goes, I'm too short, and it elongates the eyeball. And what happens now is, of course, the light is even further in front of the retina and your vision is quote unquote worse. So it's called axial elongation. The eyeball elongates, caused by the lens wear. So short term, your vision is better. When the optometrist gives you your first pair of glasses, when you go back a year later, your vision is measurably worse and you need stronger glasses.
What I had been told, or what I hear still, is that you have to wear your glasses because it helps with the eyesight. You know, if you're walking around with blurry eyes all the time, that's making it worse.
Or if you're squinting, that's making it worse or something.
That's all correct, right? They're not wrong. The problem is, so those glasses that you're wearing are made for distance vision. When you're wearing them in close up, right, which is not what they're designed for, like now the light is moved even further back in your eye. The closer you look at something with your distance glasses, the more that hyperopic defocus happens, the more some stray light focuses behind your retina. So when you got your first ever pair of glasses, they were really low power, you know, one diopter-ish glasses. If you had always taken those off when you look at things up close, your eyesight might not really have gotten any worse. It's the close-up wearing of distance glasses that causes most of the issue.
Well, that makes sense, especially with then if we're talking about contacts, where you're wearing them all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a kind of a supply and demand thing. Most people, or a lot of people, don't really want to take personal responsibility. They don't really want to hear they're spending too much time in front of screens, or that it's their own fault, so to speak, in some way. They're happy with saying, hey, it's genetic, it's not your fault. give us this money, we'll give you these glasses, you instantly have great eyesight, we have a good business model, and everybody wins, right? Like, people are generally happy with this solution. The problem now is that some of us don't want to wear these things. They inhibit sports performance. They affect movement pretty significantly. The way you walk is different when you wear glasses. Lots of things like that. It affects your development. It affects your personality. Some people don't want that. And especially now with young kids, right? Like, 10 years ago, I would never get messages from parents. Now it's every day. Young kids, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds. And the problem is, you know, the iPad is a babysitter.
Yeah. And I think that you see this a lot in a lot of different areas of health. You know, even in physical therapy, someone comes in, say, with a muscle spasm in their back, you know, they're not looking for the exercises that they can do 5 minutes a day at home to maybe help understand why they might be getting that reoccurring muscle spasm in their back. They're looking for the balm or the tool that they can, you know, can help them rub it out daily, or just going into a physio or a chiro to have the work done to them so that they just feel better and, quote, fix it, which we really know isn't a long-term fix. So I feel like you see this a lot of areas in health.
Absolutely. I was in a hospital last year. I had lower back pain pretty consistently, and I was trying to figure out what it was. And I kid you not, this was a high-end hospital that you pay for out of pocket. And the doctor looked at me and he literally said, "The problem is you're old. You need painkillers."
Oh my gosh. No. That is awful.
That's the answer. That's it.
Oh my gosh.
Amazing. I was just shocked. I couldn't believe it, because especially I used to be a very mainstream guy. I'm not much into, you know, the fringe and stuff. I just said, well, my parents are both doctors, whatever, you know? And since discovering this myopia thing, and I've done a lot of podcasts, and I've been thrust into many of these topics that are just mind-blowing to me. And I really, part of me is like, really? So being at the doctor's office, I just couldn't believe it. He literally said, "I'm old and I just need painkillers."
Yeah. I mean, that's what we've gotten used to, is just covering up the symptoms with something that's going to temporarily make us feel better. And that's unfortunately, you know, I think what we've fallen into with glasses and contacts. And I remember I couldn't even wear contacts anymore because I was starting to form cysts under my eyelids, because my eyes were just hating the contacts, and I kept getting dry eyes, and all these different issues started happening because I was wearing contacts so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Contact lens, it causes lots of long-term issues. They're better short-term than glasses, because you have peripheral vision, which is nice. Especially like if you wear glasses, if you're outside for a walk, especially if you're stronger glasses, you tend to be focused more at the ground, for example.
Yeah.
Because you don't have good peripheral vision, you can't see. So you walk different than a person without glasses even. And when you interact physically with people, like with glasses, you only have clear vision through the center of that lens. So your natural movement as you interact with people is different, because you're kind of statically stuck in this mode where you have to focus directly forward. There's lots of little things that, since you guys are into movement, you should find that interesting, especially if you reduce your myopia and get rid of glasses, you'll notice that you have a lot more flexibility in that space of how you look at things and how you move accordingly.
So Jake, I want to dive into some of the nitty gritty, because I think when I was reading through your bio, it said you had something like a -5 diopter, and now you don't wear glasses anymore. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to know how. How can someone start to do this on their own? That's pretty fascinating.
So the super simple, short way, like, it's like, I'm going to say this like the way I say, go to the gym and lift weights to get stronger, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's the really short version is, you need 2 pairs of glasses. You need one pair for close-up and one for distance. There's no really getting around that. So you want one pair of glasses that only lets you see clearly as far as your computer screen, which, let's say that's like 60 centimeters. So on average, you'd get a diopter and a half lower glasses than your distance glasses, very, very roughly speaking. So whenever you're working up close, you put those on. You never, ever, ever wear your distance glasses during close-up. And then you see your screen clearly at an ergonomically comfortable distance. But if you move back just a little bit, you'll start to see a bit of blur. And then you build a habit of challenging that blur just a tiny little bit, right? Like, you're working, and you just remind yourself, just put your head back a little tiny bit. You see, like, oh, the text is a little tiny bit blurry. Much better 3 hours than if you're wearing your full distance correction. That's the first part. And then once you do that, once you have that down, like you've been in that mode for a month or two and you get it, like you get the feeling, you get the difference of these low adopter glasses, you're in the habit of there is a bit of blur at a certain distance, then you buy distance glasses that are slightly lower than your current ones, just a quarter diopter. And what happens there is you still have great, excellent vision, right? You can still recognize your friends and walk around safely, but small text at a distance, like license plates and ads across the street and street signs, are a little tiny bit blurry. And there's something that I call active focus, because we don't have a term for it. People that just never have worn glasses all have this. You can clear up a little bit of blur. You can blink at blurry text and it'll clear up. And once you find that and you wear slightly lower correction glasses, if you do, after 3 or 4 months, your vision is perfectly clear again. And then you repeat that same process. You reduce your glasses again by a quarter diopter and wait 3 to 4 months with those habits. And you should be able to do that consistently, where you reduce your myopia by about a diopter a year.
Wow, that's amazing. We have to then really assess and see, you know, what kind of glasses that you're getting, make sure that you can afford 2 glasses. If you can't, say you can only afford 1 pair of glasses, are there exercises outside of that, just like you said, going to the gym and kind of doing these exercises, that you recommend people start playing with, or is there something that you can verbally tell us that you can kind of just start to feel with your eyes?
Sure. So the one thing is looking into buying glasses online, because we're talking, you might be spending $15, $20 for a pair if you buy online. Like, well, what I said before, a wholesale cost pair of lenses is $2 to $5. So they don't need to be expensive. And there are places that will even put new lenses into your old frame. So this can be done fairly cost effectively. If you wear contact lenses, can be even more budget friendly, since you only wear them 3 to 4 months at a time at most. If you have higher diopter myopia, like if you can't see your screen without glasses, you can't really reverse your myopia as long as you wear those glasses for close-up. At least we haven't found a way to do that. The main thing is just the muscle spasm, right? Like if your close-up causes that muscle spasm, your eyesight's not going to improve. So you need the lower diopter for the close-up. And then for distance, you need slightly lower diopter, because you really need outside time. You really need hobby time. You really need time that you're not looking at screens every day. And that needs to have a tiny bit of blur in it. So I wish I could say there's a way getting around these tools to help you. And technically you could. Like, for example, I had -5 and I went straight to -3, which gave me a lot of blur. And it took a long time for me to get great eyesight with a -3. Can be done, but it's just painful and takes a lot longer. And the thing with eye exercises is that, considering how long this takes, it's very difficult to maintain a habit of exercises and also not be doing anything that's counterproductive at the same time, like wearing your distance glasses during close-up.
So, I mean, as you were talking, I immediately took my -2 glasses and threw them across the room since we're sitting at the computer. But this is interesting to me, because now that I'm wearing these, you know, I can just tell that I'm at that spot right now where when I lean back just a little bit, it becomes a little blurry, or lean forward, it's pretty well in focus. But I feel like at -2 where I'm at a fairly decent spot where I could just not use my glasses at all at the computer. Would that be the case?
That's absolutely, yeah. -2 is right around there. That's still a little bit on the close side, just for a lot of people in terms of ergonomics. But if you can, absolutely. I mean, that's a great first start, is just not wearing them. The second thing is, and this is kind of, I'm trying to keep this as short as possible, your eyesight varies significantly throughout the day. You can measure it. And myopia, the 2 diopters is just distance to blur. 100 divided by how far you can see clearly equals diopters, right? So you could see 50 centimeters before you see blur if you wear -2. But that's all diopters is. So you can wear -2 and you can see it about 50 centimeters away before you see blur. If you do that next to a window, the distance is going to be higher than if you do that in a LED light only lit room. And it's really kind of a great thing to start experimenting and realizing lighting really affects that distance. Your diet affects that distance. Stress affects that distance. Sleep affects that distance. Since, you know, the whole biological system is all a connected thing, once you start recognizing how your lifestyle and your day is affecting your eyesight, you can start making a lot of slightly better choices to increase that distance without your glasses to the screen.
That is beautiful information, because we love to understand how it all ties together. The entire complexity of our environment affects these different systems within our body. And it's not just one system alone, but it's how we implement all these systems together. And I love that you know, kind of draw that in. Speaking into that, are there any particular foods in general? Because, you know, we've heard before, like the old one was carrots are great for your eyes. Are there any foods in general that you recommend? Or is it just, you know, kind of trying to stay away from the very processed stuff?
Yeah. So nutrition is a whole nother big topic that I'm not an expert in, unfortunately. Vitamin A, that's the carrot thing. Definitely a good idea. My very general take is looking for deficiencies in general is a good idea, right? Like if you have a vitamin, nutrient, otherwise deficiency, if you can do a blood panel, find out if there's anything missing. Mm-hmm. Great idea. You're going to notice that in other areas of your body besides your eyes. If generally all those things are good, then your eyesight will also be fine. There are foods that are bad for your eyesight, and different people will notice this to a different degree. Anything that causes insulin spikes is not amazing. And if you start measuring that distance, right, and you're at 50 centimeters and you can see clearly, you eat a pizza and drink a Coke, the distance might be 45. Like you will literally notice during that insulin spike that your vision is measurably worse than otherwise.
So when we talk about interventions, you know, that are meant to improve our eyesight, one that always comes up is LASIK. And I want to know kind of what you think about LASIK, or people who are thinking about it or may have already gotten LASIK surgery.
My recommendation is always to look up Dr. Morris Waxler. He was the guy at the FDA responsible for getting LASIK approved, which, right, kind of makes the man an authority. Like he was the guy who put the final stamp on it at the FDA saying, yes, LASIK is fine. He is a very outspoken advocate of not doing LASIK now. He says it's the biggest mistake in his life. He's done a lot of interviews speaking to how much he regrets that he was part of getting that approved. He says the side effects, the potential side effects are irreversible, and it's not something that we should have let the public get into. The way I look at this is, you're getting a flap cut into the front of your eye that never necessarily completely heals. Like it is taking a risk for a condition or for a situation, a refractive state change that you can do yourself without taking that risk, right? Plenty of people obviously have had LASIK and it's worked out great for them. Like it can be great, but considering the risks, and if you run into any of the side effects, like if you get dry eye, which people do, or you see halos at night, or whatever the case may be, those tend to be irreversible, right? So it's really a question of, do I want to spend a year per diopter to reduce it, or do I want this to be perfect tomorrow and take my chances? And the other piece of LASIK is your eye, the elongation we talked about. The higher your myopia, the more your eyeball is elongated. And what happens is, the retina that does all the image receiving work is attached to your eyeball inside. It's not part of it. It's just attached. And the more the eyeball elongates, it gets football shaped. The attachment is strained. So you get stuff called lattice degeneration. You have much increased risk of retinal detachment. There's lots of issues that happen with a long-term football shaped eyeball. If you get LASIK, you get perfect vision again, but LASIK is just like a permanent contact lens. It didn't change the main component of myopia, which is the eyeball length. Hypothetically speaking, theoretically, reducing your myopia by reducing the eyeball length could be a much better idea. And if you get LASIK, you no longer have that option, right? Because you're wearing a permanent contact lens.
Wow. I'm wearing one permanently. I did get LASIK. It did work out well for me. Interestingly, I did have very dry eyes prior to it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it is scary. You are taking a really big risk, and it is a lot of money to take that risk, for sure.
The other side thing is, so if LASIK worked out fine, which I speak more negatively of LASIK because I try to encourage people to look at other alternatives first. Like if you had LASIK and it worked out fine, great. Obviously it does, right? For 96% of people, can be fine. You can get myopia again, because what happens is if your myopia was increasing before you had LASIK, LASIK is just another, it works the same as a contact lens. So if your vision was stable before, right, just not great, and then you had LASIK, now it's great and stable, that's fine. You shouldn't really get LASIK when your eyesight is actively still getting worse. And you still, at some point, may find yourself not having super clear vision again because of too much close-up. I've got a fair amount of cases. We've done podcasts with people who had LASIK 10 years ago, and now they're back to a minus 1.5, which I'm just saying this is also entirely preventable by the same stuff I talk about. So it's still a great idea, even if you have great eyesight, to just go, what are these things that cause myopia, that muscle spasm, and building better habits to prevent that. Or if you start getting that sense that, hey, my vision is not as clear as it used to be, you can do some of these things to get back to, you know, 20/20 or better.
Hmm. So kind of to that point where you said, you know, your eyesight could still be getting worse, you know, prior to getting LASIK, or just talking about eyesight across the lifespan, you know, in health and medicine, a lot of the times we talk about systems of the body and how they might get slightly less efficient or might work slightly slower as we age. Is anything like that true for eyesight as well?
Yeah, absolutely. There is something called presbyopia, which is you start to lose your close-up vision clarity as you get older. And I'm in that age bracket since I'm almost 50. You start to, that lens in the front of your eye that we talked about hardens. It gets less flexible as we age. And I don't know any way to prevent that. You know, diet may have an effect. Lots of things may have an effect, but that lens gets less flexible. So the muscle has a harder time shaping it. So you lose, like, the extreme close-up vision becomes less clear. And that's just a fact of aging. What I've noticed, though, and especially since I travel a lot and I spend a lot of time in Asia and in places where there is less commercialized lens sales, is people are being actively sold glasses for presbyopia, even when they don't report symptoms, quite a lot in Western countries, right? Like, you're 50, you go to the optometrist, they say, hey, try these reading glasses. And you notice that your reading gets easier and you can see things up closer more easily. And so people buy these reading glasses, not realizing as soon as they start regularly wearing them, they start to depend on them. And when they take them off, they can now no longer read up close.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. And I just like to ask that because, again, with a lot of other systems of the body, you see some similar things. So I know that there's probably a lot of people listening out there that might be saying, kind of like you alluded to at the beginning, okay, well, I work a job, I'm busy, I have to sit at a computer all day and do this and that. If you had like two or three quick suggestions on what people could do today that would take them 1 to 5 minutes, what would you kind of want to leave them with?
So the first thing that I would say really is imagine a life where you don't need corrective lenses. Like, what about it, if anything, would be different? Because there's really no point. And what I've noticed a lot in people, that people generally are not so interested if there is another fix, right? Like, if I'm saying you could have perfect natural eyesight and people wear glasses or contact lenses, if they wouldn't use the eyesight for anything else, they kind of are like, yeah, okay, whatever, sounds interesting. But it's more of a question of, is it worth investing in this time and energy and effort of improving your eyesight? You know what I mean? Is there a sport mm-hmm. that you would do if you had great eyesight? Would you like to be able to ride a bike, and if it starts raining, you're not stuck with glasses getting all, you know, can't see anything anymore? Would you try a new sport maybe? Is there something in your life that you could see yourself enjoying more if you didn't need glasses? I would start with that first. Because if you do that, then the next step from your 1 to 5 minute idea is measure your eyesight. What we talked about earlier is realize that distance always changes, because that's kind of almost addictive in a positive sense, in that you start to go, huh, my eyesight this morning is much worse because I watched Netflix for 4 hours last night on my iPad before I went to bed, right? Like normally it's 50 centimeters. Now it's 35, right? Like it's like stepping on a scale or just any tangible evidence that goes, this was not good for me. And then because the corrective thing at the very minimum is not wearing a distance glasses during close-up is already kind of an effort of you're investing money and time in figuring that out. So really the first step is going, is it worth it? Would my life be better in some way? And the second step is measuring how your eyesight changes.
Super helpful. And I know that this is just going to be very eye-opening. It is for us, you know. Oh, eye-opening.
Eye-opening.
I didn't even catch that. No, but it's just very insightful. And I appreciate you diving into the work that you're doing to bring this education, because what we know and our system at Regular is just throwing Band-Aids on everything. And so the fact that there are workarounds, the fact that there are solutions that we can bring and that we have the power to change it's just empowering. And you're bringing that to people. So thank you for doing the work and diving in and really continuing to learn about it. Where can people find more information about what you're doing and read about more stuff?
So the best resource is our website is called endmyopia.org. It's huge. So if anybody who is visiting it for the first time, it can seem a little bit overwhelming. There's lots of links there. We have a big Facebook group. We have an even bigger forum. We have a terrible YouTube channel. We have a free guide. So you can, there's an email currently. Soon it's going to be available in app format to walk you through all of these steps of what happens with your eyes and why and how to understand the biology and where the research is and how to fix a lot of these things. You have to consider it a little bit of a project. Like there's no, when you say Band-Aids, this is one of those things that's not going to be a 10 steps thing, but rather a little bit of research. But it's a great resource and there's a huge community. And when you speak of empowerment, there's a lot of people who are really into health and fitness and well-being, and many of them discovered it through improving the eyesight. So it's a really kind of a fun place to be to do something that noticeably improves how you interact with the world.
Yeah.
And we'll get that all linked up. And I think, I mean, we're just kind of scrolling through your website here on the other end, and there's definitely a lot of rabbit holes that you could go down that will explain some of the things that we talked about in the longer form version, if you're interested in diving in some of this stuff. So we definitely would encourage to do that for yourself if you're listening out there and were interested at all in any of this. Jake, thanks so much again for making the time and for giving us all these tips and tidbits.
Super awesome. Thanks so much for having me on.
And there we have it, yet another amazing guest on the Optimal Body Podcast. So now what we ask of you, if you loved any bit of that or resonated with it, go share it out, share it with a friend, share it on your social media, because you know there are more people out there that would resonate with it just the same. Also, subscribe, rate, review on your favorite podcast app so we know what you want to learn or other guests that you think we should bring on for you in the future. Keep tuning in to find your optimal body.